The Bears on Tap Show is live today, October 24th, celebrating the second win in the Bears season. I'm back from the sunny state of Florida, back for this episode as Ron and Q, my dude, handled the last one. Q, Bears win. It's Bajan Mania out there. The streets are wild right now, man. People love this kid. It's a great story. The fact of the matter is it's something that you don't see very often in sports in general, the success, the rise to it, and just a great story overall. But first, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good. You know, I've been kind of a little like not excited about the Bears, you know, for the last like 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe something like that. And watching the film today from this game, and I'm just like, man, if Darnell Wright can go out there with one working arm and play his heart out, I can get excited about the Bears. So we're here. We're ready to talk. Let's get into it.
Yeah, too. I mean, it's their first home win since September of last year. I was at that game where they beat the Texans. Lovie Smith was the head coach of that one. Remember that game fondly, the Roquan Smith play on the goal line, I believe, which was awesome. I think he scored in that one. But they win 30-12. Tyson Bagent plays a safe but effective, and they have a good run game to back it up. Q, I got to ask you, though, man. Like, as we sit here as Bears fans, and we're happy they won, I'm going to sit here and give them their props for winning a football game. Because winning football games in the NFL is not easy. It's not. Every single team comes out there ready to play. And the Bears won a football game at home for the first time in over a year. And that's something to be excited about. But why for so many people, does this still feel like some sort of a loss? Or what did we watch? Those are my questions to you. Like, what should we feel about this win? And then also, what did we watch? Like, is there a point to look at this football game and say, yeah, like, this is what we need to be excited about. And this is, you know, something that we can hang our hat on, because I feel like as a Bears fan, we just haven't had a lot of that lately.
Yeah. I mean, so personally, I'm a big believer in, for me personally, I think every person is going to be a little different with it and how they see it, how they feel about it. But for me, I'm a big believer in enjoying every win, every season, every win you get. You know, especially recently, they're far and few between. And it's just, for me, it's not fun to watch a football team hoping they lose. It's just not. I'm hoping they win. I'm hoping they do well. I'm hoping I see development. And development is one of the things I started to key in on early this year, because I was thinking the wins aren't going to be much. So I need something to cling on to here. But I know when I hit the point where I'm rooting for losses, it's just like I become more miserable, you know, miserable to be around, miserable to talk football to. It's just like, it's just a dark place as a football fan to be rooting for losses. And I understand the concept of it, like where you're saying, I don't think they have the quarterback right now that is going to reach a Super Bowl for them. So it's all about finding that, because if you don't have that, you got nothing. And I completely understand that mindset, right? But at the end of the day, how I'm feeling while watching it, what I'm rooting for is going to have zero impact on that. You know, I mean, unless you are the most superstitious of the superstitious, me sitting there hoping for a loss isn't going to help them create a loss. So if they, you know, lose out and get the number one pick, great. You know, I'm here for it, but I am going to be a happier individual rooting for wins, even if they are losses, than I will rooting for losses. And especially when those losses turn to wins, that's just that is like banging my head in the wall level of anxiety around a game of just like, they gotta lose this. Why didn't they lose it? You know, it just, of course they didn't lose it. They're professional athletes. Their contracts are on the line. They're, their job is on the line. They're out there to play football and win football games. So I'm here for rooting for them winning. I'm here to see them win. You know, I mean, because again, rooting for ain't gonna impact whether they get number one overall or not. I just need to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think like when we're sitting here talking about victories and like what this season should be about, I think it's difficult to sit because yeah, obviously, like you said, they don't have the quarterback, I don't think, on this roster that's going to bring them to the Super Bowl. But there also is many young pieces on this roster that you want to see perform. And those same guys, I truly believe in terms of like winning in the National Football League, it's about gaining that experience and learning how to win over the course of, you know, the season. And this season may not be, you know, make the playoffs, but I do value some of these wins because that does mean that they can look at a guy like Tyson Bagent and put together a game plan like this against an NFL team that's serviceable. I mean, he didn't light it up. I mean, he was safe. He game managed, as you know, some would say, but you can win if you don't turn the ball over and you're going to play decent defense and get turnovers. And if you can run the football like they did, absolutely.
And avoid sacks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sacks are almost like a sack leads to a punt something like 65% of the time or something. So it's like a sack is almost as bad as an interception downfield. You know, it's like they are fairly similar.
Yeah. And I mean, for sure, the playbook is a lot more open on second and six opposed to second and 14, 15.
Yeah.
You know, winning on first down, too, I think is something that they did very well on Sunday after going back and watching the football game. But I think in terms of this year, considering the fact that they did trade last year's number one for the Carolina pick, which seems like has a good chance to be towards the top of the draft, the Bears fans don't have to sit and root for losses for their own team this year. For a lot of ways, they have to root for Carolina losses, which I think allows guys like Darnell Wright and Jalen Johnson and Brisker and, you know, some of these guys on the defensive line and offensive line and guys like Darnell Mooney and to learn how to win in the National Football League, because these guys have lost so often that I think there is some value to what we saw on Sunday. Go out, get some confidence, you know, win a football game. And I was fairly pleased. This is one of those where you go and you're like, man, if they lose, you win. And if they win, you really win too. So watching these are like, it's really difficult to sit and watch NFL games for the Bears right now and have feelings, positive and negative, because I feel like this horrible middle ground is where we're stuck.
Yeah. I mean, the entire concept of it, of rooting for losses, to avoid that purgatory, right? Avoid that. Like, the worst place you can be in the NFL is really good without a quarterback. And that's what you're entirely – the rooting for loss is entirely, for me at least, rooted in that concept of, like, you need the quarterback first before you can start being good. But you're right. The Carolina pick, I mean, they're still winless. They're the only winless team in the NFL. It's starting to look really good for the Bears right there. And, I mean, the Bears still have a shot at, you know, ending up with a top three pick themselves. And I don't think it's unrealistic to say they won't. I mean, when you really think this win through, it's they beat a 37-year-old Brian Hoyer-led Raiders who weren't really a good team to begin with. Even with Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think they scored over 21 points in a game this year. So they were a fairly flawed team to begin with, but you're going to have more tests along the way that you can kind of prove up some of what you showed Sunday. And honestly, for the defense, the last few Sundays, what you've shown, because they're starting to play pretty well on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of positives to take out of this one. But first, let's go to the comments here. Scott from Iowa, looking forward to the Tyson Bagent trade in 2 years for a first round pick. Man, Scott, you are Mr. Mr. Positivity over there. That kind of leads us into our next topic here, Q. Tyson Bagent. What did you think of him on Sunday? What did you think of the game plan that was put, you know, by Luke Getsy and company? And, like, what does this kid – what did this kid do well on Sunday that allowed him to be in positions to succeed? Because that's what coaching is. It's getting in positions to where you don't play out of yourself. You don't try to do too much. And I think that's realistically what he did on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it was the backup QB game plan. It was, you know, keep it safe, keep it simple, get the ball out, avoid negative plays like sacks, fumbles, interceptions, and just try to make a play or two in between here and there. You know, a lot of screens, not very many true dropbacks, a lot of different, like, jet motion and misdirection behind the line of scrimmage after the snap, before the snap. There was a whole lot of smoke and mirrors going on. And that's what you do when your backup's playing, right? Let it, whether it's a undrafted free agent rookie or not. Now, I will say, when it's an undrafted free agent rookie, you might have to limit some more of that stuff because their grasp of it might not be very strong. So that's fairly impressive that they were able to do as much of that smoke and mirrors as they were with a guy who'd never taken an NFL snap before last week in relief duty. Now, as far as his actual, like, quarterback play, I mean, he lived up to what he was supposed to be so far, in my opinion. You know, I can't sit here and say he did a bunch of stuff that I'm hoping to see a starting quarterback do, or, like, went above and beyond that. But he did what was asked of him. He did what he needed to do. And that's all you need out of a backup. And that's good. Maybe you can start to build on it a little bit here. Reality is, if there is upside there beyond a backup, we won't know for a few weeks. Like, it's going to take probably three games of game tape before defensive coordinators figure out how to just, like, what makes this guy tick and how do we do that as often as possible, you know? So it's the thing that really sticks out to me with it. And, like, not to be the Debbie Downer here, but the 2.5 air yards per attempt.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's not sustainable. And as soon as next week, someone might be forcing him to show he can make throws beyond 10 yards because they're just not going to give it. They're just going to take it away and say, you need to be able to do this. So that's what I'm interested to see from him going forward. But for now, I see a guy who looks like a serviceable backup and that you can, that's not nothing. Chase Daniel made $10 million a year. You know, that's, if you found a serviceable backup on a undrafted free agent 4-year deal that is going to be cheap for the next few years, that's an asset to your organization because it's going to be versus Chase Daniel. It's going to be $9 million a year you can spend elsewhere.
Yeah, it's nice to have a guy that can execute, right, as your backup. A guy can come in, have the dumbed down playbook, but, you know, lean on his run game, manage the clock, stay out of trouble. And that's not sexy football by any ways. That's not something that I think we get up excited for on Sunday. But, I mean, are there a few things that they can do with this offense with him at the helm to maybe extend that airtime a little bit? Like, is he able to push the ball down the field at all?
You know, I have not gone back and looked at the Shepherd tape, so I can't tell you too confidently, but I'm sure he can. I'm sure he's capable of doing more than we saw. I imagine against the Raiders, it was a lot more of, this is what they keep giving us, and if that's what they keep giving us, we're just going to keep taking it. And he did turn down some downfield looks that were that appeared to be there, but, you know, that happens all the time. I mean, he kept getting the job done on the short stuff, so you can't knock a guy when he's getting the job done for turning down other stuff because it's like it was working, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't knock a guy for that unless what he was choosing wasn't working. And then it's like, well, why are we, you know, smashing our head into a wall here trying to make something work that we know hasn't worked all game, probably isn't going to work again. So what can they do? I mean, it's hard to say without knowing the player much better, you know, and it's, they have wide receivers who can work with it, and it'll be interesting to see too, as he faces more coverage concepts, more, because he wasn't really asked to diagnose coverages this past Sunday. You know, it, when you're not throwing downfield, you are not reading. And it, like, you, a lot of that stuff's pre-designed, predetermined. I mean, screens, how often is a screen not supposed to go to where the screen is? You know, that stuff is predetermined, and it's asking, especially a UDFA rookie, asks him to stay within himself and just do what the play is supposed to do, as opposed to asking him to recognize whether he's getting blitzed by a backer in the middle of the field, whether it's too high in the middle or one high, whether there's a robber coming up from the box in a one high look, whether they're playing off man, press man, whether they're playing a cloud over the receivers and then bracketing. Like, there is so much to process that further down the field that we don't know if he can do yet. And it's perfectly reasonable if he can't do that yet, but if he's like getting better each week with it, that's what you'd hope to see.
Yeah. Real quick, we got a comment from Scott. What's your thoughts on bringing in Nathan Peterman to throw the Hail Mary?
Got a stronger arm, my man. I mean, that's what they said. That's what the coach has pretty much said. So like as far as if you're reading between the lines, that's my understanding of it. They trusted him to bomb it however many yards better than Bajan would. So yeah, that's a bit of a red flag for a guy as far as his ability to become a starter, but to be a backup, I think that can work fine.
I think a conspiracy theory here. I know Nathan Peterman notorious for throwing picks. They just wanted to see if they could add another one into that that stat line a little bit there. One of the more impressive ones too. One attempt, one pick.
You think Luke Getsy bet the Nathan Peterman over a half pass attempt?
There's a very good chance that happened. And I'm about 100% positive he had Foreman for fantasy football as well, considering the fact that he had a nice game with three touchdowns. Really lend on it. He was really good. I thought he was, you know, serviceable. He ran through the real tough nose running back. You know, that was nice to see and fresh.
Foreman carried the Panthers to 7 wins last year. This dude is dangerous with the football in his hands. He looks like a Mack truck out there. He looks like he's like double the size of your average running back, and he can move. I mean, he is an aggressive runner, and I love watching that dude play football. He's just fun to watch.
Yeah, all of those goal line carries were like, man, like the minute he had the ball in his hands, he was looking for somebody to run over. And that was something I really enjoyed. Moving on, this part of the offense, we'll talk about the offensive line. I know you're working through – you're at 3 of the 5 positions already in your review, but who stood out so far, and you know who had a nice day?
So, starting at the top, Darnell Wright is not going to get the credit he deserves for this game. My grade on him is not good. PFF's grade is not good. It's not terrible, but like it's not impressive. Not you don't look at the number and say, that was a great game for that guy. But I got to just say hats off to Darnell Wright, man. I mean, he had the shoulder injury all week. He wasn't sure if he was even going to play. He was out there blocking Max Crosby, a top 5 edge rusher in the NFL, with his left arm pretty much tied behind his back. He just couldn't use it. Like, watching the whole game, I just put a video out on Twitter of – probably about a third or a quarter of right snaps, the ones that I thought stood out to me, good or bad. And really, I don't know how you're not getting destroyed by a guy who's a Pro Bowler, potential all-pro talent on the edge, when you can't protect your inside shoulder because you just can't use your left arm. Like, he got away with holds. Everyone does. But, like, it was very impressive to see Darnell Wright doing what he was doing, despite being severely limited by that shoulder injury. And then next to him, a ton of kudos needs to go to Tevin Jenkins too, because when you're a right tackle, and you can't use your left hand, your left arm, you are super susceptible to inside moves, right? So that's where the edge rusher is lined up just to the, just if you're the right tackle, edge rusher's lined up just to your right. Edge rusher's going to fake towards your right or go towards your right leg, so your outside leg, to try to get you to go outside and then cut back inside on your left shoulder where you can't push because you're Darnell Wright and your left shoulder is torn up. So how do you like what does that mean? That means that the right guard has a ton of responsibility for picking that up, for getting the help into that rush lane to make sure that the guy's not getting a free run at the quarterback. And Tevin Jenkins did a good job all game, from what I could tell, really covered that up and helped be a major factor there for Wright as well. And I thought Jenkins played his cleanest game that I've probably ever seen from him. And that's not to say he's had more dominant games than this one, but his more dominant games also come with more mistakes. He's kind of like Kyle Long, I feel like, was a really great example of this. He was an animal out there, right? He would just destroy guys. But when you're playing that fast and that angry and that, like, just you get out of control on certain reps and you make mistakes when you're out of control. I thought Tevin had his most under control game that I've seen from him. And that's really exciting for me to see of, like, that's growth. You know, that's recognizing I don't need to dominate every play. Me not making a mistake is more important than me putting this guy in the dirt. And then
go on.
Oh, I was going to say, and then Lucas Patrick, he's the other one that I've watched so far. He's always going to struggle with big nose tackles, and he did again. But one thing that I've this has been like slowly building in my mind of like, I just really respect the way Patrick plays football. I think that I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that you're saying, oh, that's a good starter you got there. Like, he's just a little small, not quite athletic enough. Like, his strength is never going to be up there for that. But the way that the guy goes about playing football, and just so many little things that he does right and ways that he helps the guys around him, it's impressive and it's laudable. I think that he's a guy who I have been surprised by how much I've enjoyed watching on the offensive line, despite his lack of clear, like, wins consistently, because he just competes, man. He just competes his ass off.
What do you think about keeping Wright and Tevin on that side? Cause I really like, cause I think they both want to hit somebody on that side. They play real, you know, mean ferociously. I kind of like having that right side of the line being that and having that idea of like, man, I at any moment, I know these guys are going to put the helmet on somebody, and I think I could pick up a yard using that right side.
So I like that. The only thing that I dislike about it is that you signed Nate Davis to a 3-year deal that he's going to play most of. And Nate Davis has never played anything but the right side. So you're kind of, I'm not sure that you want to go ask Nate Davis to switch to the left. And just from a logic standpoint, like, you sign this guy to a pretty big deal, put him where he's going to do best kind of thing. And Tevin, you know, Tevin can play on the left. He's played left tackle. He's played left guard. Like, he's more natural on the right, but like he does fine on the left as well. And really, we haven't seen their starting left side together all year.
Right.
If I will say it probably is a flawed plan to fully expect Tevin Jenkins to be ready 16 games, 17 games to go health-wise until he proves he can. I know he's made some changes this year to his diet and with his preparation, which maybe that'll help. But until he proves it, I think it's a hard thing to necessarily rely on. But Braxton Jones was one of the best run blocking left tackles for rookies in the NFL last year. So you were hoping to see a similar aspect as far as run blocking goes, which is where you can really, you know, smash heads and pass blocking. You're not talking about like that angry blocks or bully ball isn't really pass protection. That's run blocking, and that's something you had in Braxton in spades last year.
Yeah, I think having just that unit together to gel, and I think Scott put this the best way in here too. This was the best O-line all season. Hopefully they can string together a couple games with these guys. It'd be nice to just see this unit play at the positions that they were meant to play at and the way that Ryan Poles wanted them to this year. Any other thoughts from the offense? You know, any guys on the outside? I know DJ Moore is DJ Moore, but, you know, did you see anything? I thought, you know, that you said a lot of things about, you know, the smoke and mirrors kind of plays. I thought that Scott was really damn good on the outside. They ran a reverse to him. That was fun to see him get the football in his hands, and I'm sure he's got a good rapport with Bajan, considering that, you know, a lot of them, yeah, the backup stuff they're doing together. So they seem...
I mean, yeah, you see it all the time. Guys, like when a backup quarterback comes in and suddenly the third, fourth string receiver is getting a lot of targets, a lot of catches, a lot of yards. I think that's a pretty common thing to see of like they're who they know, they're who they have chemistry with because they're who they practice with. And that's – I think back to last year when Kenny Pickett came in for the Steelers, George Pickens started doing great. Because George Pickens was who he knew from rookie minicamp, who he knew from offseason, like from OTAs and stuff before Pickens became the starter. He didn't know Deontay Johnson. He didn't know what Deontay Johnson was going to do on a nine route, if he was going to go back shoulder or veer towards the sideline or what. You know, there are real chemistry aspects there that I think play into that. And it's Scott's a guy he's probably more comfortable with just from that experience.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty. Any other thoughts on the offense there, Q? Anything you saw?
One thing I was going to say to Scott's comment, that he thought this was the best the offensive line had played. I actually, you know, pushed back against that a little. I thought, because like Darnell Wright played extremely well for the circumstances. Probably his worst game of the year, though. Like, if you didn't know he was injured and you're watching that tape, you're saying, what happened to Darnell Wright? So, from that aspect, like I thought that the O-line played fine, not great. I thought the quarterback knowing that sacks were not acceptable went a long way. And like with a quarterback like Justin, you can't tell that guy sacks are unacceptable, because then you're taking away what he does well, right? You're taking away that creativity, that playmaking ability. With a guy like Bajan, the playmaking ability really isn't that high of a ceiling. So you can probably feel pretty good about saying to him, can't take sacks. You just can't.
Yeah. I got one more question for you on the offense. It just came to me as we were just sitting here. Obviously Justin Fields is sitting on the sideline watching all of this. He's been in the meetings. Does this experience, you think, help him at all? Taking a step back and watching a guy like Bajan out there get the ball out of his hands quick. You know, obviously it's a different play. It's a different game plan. The circumstances are different, but it's still football. And sometimes I wonder, you know, getting a second to break away from the everyday stresses of being a starting quarterback. And obviously he's hurt, and now he just gets a different view. I wonder maybe if this helps a little bit. Obviously there's a lot of debate on if Justin's going to be, you know, a future of this franchise, but there's still games to be played and there's still time for that to show. And I just wonder what your opinion is on this little mini break of like, hey, watch Tyson. This is what he's doing well. And maybe Justin has the opportunity to add some of this to his game where it's, let's get rid of the ball quicker. And maybe he sees things on the sideline he doesn't see normally in a football game when things are going 700 miles an hour.
I think you could make a case for it. I think you can look back as recently as late last season when Trevor Siemian came in and had the offense actually moving pretty well. And Justin came back, he was looking a lot more like Siemian than he had previously, as far as like getting stuff out on time to the short stuff, like getting through stuff quickly and just getting the ball out. There was after he watched Simeon for a game, I think it was just that Jets game, but he came back and it all started looks a little bit smoother. Just, I think the process of like, okay, I see how this can work. Now granted, he'd seen it before. So like, it's not like it's a new thing. Like something just suddenly clicks like, oh, I get it now. You know, I don't think that that's what you're talking about. If anything, I would say it could be interesting for a lot of people. Teaching is the best way to learn, right? And we know we heard that Fields was working like crazy with Bajan to get him ready for this game. Him teaching concepts, ideas, explaining things out, because when I say, like, you know, why if an offensive tackle and an offensive guard are combo blocking on a three technique, like why it's important for one of them to have their inside leg in front of the other's inside leg, like understanding it top to bottom versus just saying it, like understanding that, because that first guy needs to be able to step in and take the full man while the second guy peels off to the linebacker. That understanding the responsibility and seeing it in live action happen, not through your eyes, but from the sideline, I think can help you understand the big picture a little bit better. So I could see that being kind of at play where he's, you know, he tells Tyson Bajan why his read needs to go 1 to 2 to 3. And then Bajan asks why, and he needs to be able to think it through and process. Well, why? Yeah. Why is that? And then like thinking it through, not that he doesn't know, but that you don't think about it every time you look at it. Right. You start to forget the fine details of things the more you see it. So maybe that could help.
Yeah. I like that thought. Cause I think too, like even in everyday, that's a common thing for anybody in the workplace, not just an NFL quarterback. Being somebody who teaches and can understand all the little nuances and understand why you do things too. Maybe this is also time to ask those questions to Luke Getsy of why. Why do we look at it this way when we're on the sideline? And sure, I'm sure those conversations happen all the time, but maybe they're happening more often because there's just more time for Justin to be in his ear opposed to, now I got to go get with, you know, the wide receivers to get on the same page. I got this I got to do. I got that I got to do. No, now it's just this time to sit next to Luke Getsy and just be like, hey, why do we teach this concept this way? You know, and what does he see? And what am I supposed to be seeing? And I don't know. I love Justin Fields. I'm going to root for that kid all the way to the bitter end. And I'll probably end up rooting for him if he ends up going somewhere else. And I'm still stuck in the day of like, I still think this kid could be something because there is so much talent. And maybe that's the Cub fan in me and I'm just hopeful. But I still think that there's still time to correct this wrong too. And there's still time to correct some of this stuff. And he's just so damn talented, man. It's hard to sit here and like just throw the X and be like, all right, well, you know, let's get Caleb Williams or Drake May or somebody else in here right away when you have a guy like that who's that talented in your room already and you still can't get it done. I think like in terms of like the win-loss column, this kind of just like rounds out what we were talking about earlier too. Yeah, you can get a generational talent at quarterback. And then I think the next part of it has been one of the Bears' biggest problems, and it's the development part after. So we can sit here and root for the top pick and root for, you know, this and that to pull our way, but then it comes down to what's in the building and what they're teaching. And I think that's the most important part of it. I mean, Patrick Mahomes sat behind, you know, Alex Smith for a year, learned for a whole year, and then decided that just came out. I was just reading this. He didn't know coverages or protections for, you know, over a year. You know, so there's a lot of things that a quarterback needs to learn. I just sit here and I'm like, man, he's so talented. And now it's like, man, I hope the best for the kid. And I sit here and I'm just frustrated because of it.
Yeah. No, I think The best analogy I can put to that is I used to do some boxing just for like fun and exercise, and like, but every time I'd spar, it was like I'd take some hits to the face, because like when you're boxing, you know, your hand is supposed to be up here, but they start to sag and they start to sag. And it's like, they could tell me all they wanted that my hands were sagging, but until I sat around the sparring ring and saw it happen to someone else, it never fully clicked for me, right? It never fully clicked for me. After that, it became a lot easier in the ring for me to think like, oh, that it was happening to that guy. I got to be careful of that. Like, because I saw it happen to someone else, not through my own eyes. Well, through my own eyes, but not from my point of view. Right. I saw it from their point of view, which made a huge difference. And I think that is something you can hope he gets out of this.
Yeah. Either way, 30-12 wins. Nice. And part of that, moving on to the defensive side of the football, I think it's the biggest crime of this episode so far, Q, is that we went 36 minutes and we haven't talked about Jalen Johnson yet. And I'll tell you what, man, pay that man his money, as they say on Rounders, one of my favorite movies. What was your opinion on him on Sunday, man? Like, I was all into the wearing orange, being bright, going out there and going against an elite receiver and just competing.
Hey, man, the quarterback can't say I didn't know he was there.
Yeah, right.
I love that type of attitude. And nothing changed. Jalen Johnson, the same dude he has been. He only gets recognition because suddenly he got two picks this game. He played the same game he's always been playing. He's a hell of a football player, hell of a cornerback. And the only, as far as I'm concerned, the only reason why you wouldn't want to extend him would be injury concerns because of the shoulder issues that he's had. And I'm sure the ball production has something to do with it, like why he hasn't been extended yet. I think that's a bunch of crap. Like, interceptions are they're so fluky. They're so luck-based, unless you're one of the five guys who actually, like, does an awesome job creating them. Like, if – I think Eddie Jackson's a great example. Who the hell's going to throw the football at Eddie Jackson? You know, the last, like, 4 years? Because there were better areas to take risks at. It's hilarious. You watch the Vikings play the Bears. You can actively see Kirk Cousins look at a guy and be like, oh no, Eddie's there. Moving on. Yeah. Like, it's just like, no, why would I do that? Why would I even risk it? And that's what cornerbacks and safeties deal with. If their secondary isn't strong all around them, they're just not going to get the risky targets. They're not going to get the looks like that. So he got a few interceptions off it. He's been an awesome corner since the day he got to the Bears. The only times he hasn't been was when he was playing through shoulder issues. If you feel confident the shoulder issues are not going to be an issue, the guy's 24 years old. Like, I don't see why you wouldn't re-sign him. We have seen enough talent walk away from the Bears the last few years that I think I would love to see him come back. But I think that was a bit of the two interceptions were a bit of a statement for him of like, there, I got your picks.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, too, that, like, immediately after he was on 670 The Score this week, already talking that, you know, the Bears and his agent are in talks. We definitely, you know, covered that here at OnTap Sports, and I can go ahead and read that. You hit the nail on that. If Poles trades this guy, what is the difference between the Chicago Bears and the Oakland A's at this point? Nothing. I'm tired of watching young talent go out the door. We're not a farm system.
At that point, the A's might be card counters or we're playing 52 pickup. But
yeah, like, and it's 100% because the more football players like Jalen Johnson we have on this roster, the better. And with the history of the draft and the percentages, you go over them all the time as you trade for picks. You know, the percentages of it being an all-pro guy go down, and you have an all-star quarterback right now. It's the same argument for Roquan Smith when he was here too. it's figure out how to keep these young, good players that you drafted in the second round. You hit on a pick, keep them in your system, because you're trying to build a team with a defensive head coach. It doesn't make any sense to me to let him walk out the door.
I mean, the only way trading it makes sense is if you know you're not going to re-sign him, right? If you know you're not going to re-sign him, you better trade him. Otherwise, what the hell are you doing? You know, you're getting nothing. But I don't see why you wouldn't re-sign him unless his money ask is just outrageous. Like I said, he's 24 years old. As long as his health, you feel good about his shoulder holding up, there are all the reasons in the world to bring him back. I honestly think he reminds me of a guy like James Bradberry when Bradberry was in Carolina, and only like half or a third of NFL fans knew who he was.
Because
he was very understated in a lot of his time, but I think his play was very similar, and he was never a big interception guy, you know. But then he gets the Eagles in the later years of his career now, and he's surrounded by all this really good talent, and he's the best corner on the team. You know, I think that's the type of thing you're looking at with Jalen Johnson, where like the guy has not played in a secondary that is all that talented around him the last few years, outside of maybe his rookie year. If he gets to a team that has that type of talent around him, I think you're going to see him just blow up.
Yeah, I hope the blow up is here. I hope that, you know, the Bears are able to put some talent around him, and we'll see, you know, the tree bear the fruit from Jalen Johnson. But this defensive general, man, has been playing pretty decent over the course of the last couple of weeks. I think they've been pretty good. They've made some changes ever since Eberflus took over, you know, the play calling on the defensive side of it. Things have been pretty good. Who's standing out on this unit? They're doing this with getting next to no pressure on the front too, but I know that you go into depth with the trenches and stuff like that. Trench-wise, you know, linebacker-wise, just this defense in general, like, what are they doing? And then also, who's really standing out on tape that's really like, man, this guy's really growing, and this guy's putting in good performance after good performance after good performance?
I mean, I think Javon Dexter has really just continued to grow based on the stats. I haven't looked at his tape yet from this game, but I know he played, I think, the most snaps he has in a game so far this year, and he took advantage of it. He was playing very well against a Raiders offensive line that does not lack for power and grit. Like, you almost worry a little bit about a guy whose entire game is power and grit, like Javon Dexter, when he's going up against an opponent whose offensive line is also based on power and grit. And Javon, he played well, he's got grown man strength, man. If you didn't know that by now, you do now. Like, the guy is just strong. And then outside of that, I mean, I haven't looked at the tape for the defense on this game yet. It's nice to see the linebackers starting to get some more impact plays going on. I've really liked how they have added in more blitzes, more bluff pressures or sim pressures, and more just kind of wrinkles into their defense that help them be more productive out there. But so I can't get too in depth on it, because like I said, I haven't went back and rewatched the tape yet, but I can't help but think getting Kyler Gordon back healthy has made a difference too. I think that he was a big part of their plans for this year, and it was a real blow to have him out, and him being back there helps. And it's also helpful when you're going up against a backup quarterback.
Yeah, especially a guy who can't throw downfield. It seemed like on that first Jalen Johnson pick that went for a touchdown, that ball hung up there for forever. But yeah, they're doing I think they're doing better things. They're building. You can kind of see, you know, that they're starting to buy in on this system. They're playing real discipline. I think that's the
they're the number two run defense in the NFL in yards per carry right now. Like, they've allowed the fifth least rushing yards, and on defense, I believe they're one of the top rushing defenses by advanced stats too. Let's see. Okay, so they're 14th in EPA per play against the run and 10th in rush success rate for the defense. So, I mean, they have been a solid run defense, which was one of my worries coming into this year. But I really think that Dexter and Billings have helped it a lot and helped keep the linebackers clean so they can go make plays in the run. And I have talked my amount of shit about Justin Jones in my life. But hats off to him. He's been playing well.
Yeah, it's nice to see. You know, the three turnovers were nice this weekend. Love to see that. Just love to see the type of physical football they're playing too. Like you said, Kyler Gordon's been really impressive. He's been a guy that I've watched since he's come back and been like, okay, I can see why they're so high on this secondary, right? He can get into the box. I think the most interesting part is like between Brisker and Gordon, you got two guys that could really step into that box and make some good tackles, some hits. You don't see that all the time. They're real physical. And I think that's what I love about, you know, what we're kind of seeing over the past couple weeks here.
Yeah. But, it's a physical sport, man.
Damn right. But we're going to move on to the preview for the Chargers in just a second, but I do want to leave this last kind of thought to you. Anything from Sunday's game that stood out to you, anything that you want to elaborate on?
I'm really curious how Darnell Wright's shoulder is going to be this week because he's got Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa coming at him. So, I mean, they're not what they once were, but they're still pretty darn good.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they game plan this too. Obviously, you know, we talked about the 2.6 air yards or whatever it was over the course of this weekend. It'll be interesting to see. Moving on to the preview, have you gotten into any Chargers tape, anything like that stands out about the Chargers, and what should the Bears be concerned about going into Sunday night?
So, I mean, the secondary is going to be tested. We think they're starting to look good, playing better, back to full health outside of Eddie. But Keenan Allen, Quentin Johnston, he's been a bit of a disappointment, the rookie out of TCU, but he still was a first-round wide receiver. Josh Palmer has been a quality wide receiver for them for a few years now as just a number four coming into this year. But like I think he's really proven his mettle. And then you add in at tight end, they have Gerald Everett, who's always been a bit underrated of a pass catcher, I think, but that's really what he's there for. He's not much of a blocker and just a well-rounded offense. Austin Eckler, you throw in there, who, you know, you're not too scared of the Chargers running game. You're terrified of their passing offense, though. Like they have a quarterback who can distribute it around the field, and they have the playmakers around him to hit big plays. And this is a desperate Chargers team sitting at 2-4 right now in a hot seat year for their head coach, Brandon Staley. This is a must-win game for them. Like at home, prime time, Sunday night.
Back you have a team that's
having to fly all the way to the West Coast from their central time. Like it's at kickoff, it's going to be what, 10 p.m. to the Bears players. Uh-huh. Like they're going to feel like they're playing until 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. Like that is a big advantage for the Chargers in a, like I said, a must win game for them. If they want to make the playoffs, they can't lose this game. After it, they got the Jets, the Lions, the Packers, the Ravens, Patriots, Broncos. Like, so there's some more winnable games in there, but everyone, like, once you got four losses, the max you can lose is seven. They can only lose three more the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's dire time for the Chargers. Q, what do the Bears have to do to win this football game? Can they win this football game? And I need a score prediction for you or from you. Just give me some thoughts on what the Bears need to do, and then give me a score at the end.
You need a lot of Deontay Foreman runs, like rush yards. You need some angry runs in there. The Chargers, the last few years under Staley, like they're not very big believers in defensive tackles the last few years. They just don't like them. They don't want them. But this year, they did invest a little more. They got a kid in the draft named Scott Matlock, who's played well for them as like a five technique, which if you're not familiar with that, that's like what Akeem Hicks played. Mm-hmm. Fangio's defense was the five technique. And they've got a little more, Matt, but they're still just a light D-line in general. That Brandon Staley's entire MO is who cares about the run? We're here to stop the pass, right? And I think that it's kind of passing him by a little bit. Like he wants to stay in two high safeties all game to keep you from getting explosive plays in the pass, which means that if you want to beat them, the best way, in my opinion, is to gash them on the ground. If they're going to stay in too high, you make them pay for it. You can also do some of that with screens, with quick hitters, quick passes, stuff like that. But really, your best chance is to get the blockers out in front and run. And I'm not sure quick hitters do that. Screens might, but I think your best bet is runs up the middle, runs where some outside zone or some counter runs, stuff like that, where you can really get some big boys in front downfield on the second level and into the third level and make it one-on-one with a running back and a safety and just say, you better tackle him or else he's going all the way. I mean, that is the game plan against the Chargers based on what I've seen the last few years. They're going to try to make it a boat race with you. They're going to try to get you to throw a lot. That's what they do because they're going to likely get some explosives, get some quick scores, and human nature is, I got to match that. And sticking with the run game, I think it's a big point here. Dolphins had 230 rushing yards against them week one. The Raiders put up 160 on them a few weeks ago. Just this past game, Chiefs put up, 140 rush yards on them. They've also had some good performances against the run, like against Dallas, they only allowed 50 yards, against Tennessee, only 60. So I'd be interested to see what they did in those games, especially the Tennessee one. Because I imagine the Tennessee game plan was fairly similar to what the Bears game plan will be. And how much they stack up the line, how much Staley is willing to get out of his too high safety looks and admit that the run game matters. That's one thing to watch for me that I want to see how they respond to knowing that they're going up against a team who's going to want to pound the rock on them and might not have a quarterback that you really need two high safeties against until he proves otherwise.
Sounds like the Lovie Smith years. We get off the bus running. That sounds a lot like what they're going to need to do, get some turnovers, get some ugly touchdowns, things like that. Score prediction.
I'm going to say, so Tennessee, that game, Tennessee lost to the Chargers 24-27. I'm going to say the Bears win because life's too short to pick the Bears to lose. I'm just going to cut this down some. So Bears 23, Chargers 21.
All right. I like it. Getting another victory Monday next week would be nice. I think the Bears are going to win too. But I think this is like true Sunday night form. This may be a boring, low-scoring, sloppy football game. And I think that plays into the Bears' hands in some ways. I think we get a 20-17 Bears win. And we'll be happy for that sake. Although I do have Justin Herbert in fantasy football, so if he does happen to just, go off, I won't be upset. I'll tell you that just
and
off the bat.
For full disclosure, I'm picking the Chargers in Survivor this week. So
yeah, there you go. See, so when the money's on the table, pick the Chargers. Hugh, any final thoughts for today's episode?
I think that's all I got. Just let's see what Beijing can do. This is going to be a good
test. Agent man. The secret agent man. He is, man. It's going to be a test. Let's see if he can hold up against the likes of Bosa and Mac. This is Bears on Tap. We've been here recapping the Raiders Bears game from Sunday. Bears beat the Raiders 30-12. Make sure you're heading over to www.ontapsportsnet.com for all your sports and literature needs. There you'll find Bulls, Bears, Cubs, White Sox. Got the Hawks in full form. You'll find all that stuff. All the podcasts are with On Tap. Make sure you're heading over to www.ontapsportsnet.com for all your sports and literature needs. And while you're there, stop at the merch store because, as I said in the last couple episodes, before you know it, you're going to blink and Christmas is going to be here. And I heard there's rumor on the street that every single person wants a Bears on Tap, Cubs on Tap, Sox on Tap in general t-shirt for Christmas. It's a great stocking stuffer. Make sure you're heading over there. We have keychain stickers, coasters, what are those koozies? Man, name it, we got it. Make sure you're heading over to www.ontapsportsnet.com for all your sports and literature needs. And as I said, we are one of two Bears podcasts here. The Bears Nation Pod also does such a great job. They run their shows on Mondays. They do such a great job of following the Bears, and so do we. Q, this was fun. Always is. Getting back into the swing of things. And this week, I remembered to turn my light on. So it isn't the dark juice box. It's the light. It's lit up juice box. I paid my electric bill this week. That way I was in somewhat of a bright room for the first time in weeks, it seems like. So, and I'm sure that bugged the hell out of you from the last couple episodes to see me just sitting in the dark.
It was fun.
You know the kid from Wedding Crashers, and he's got the emo kid. Every single time I would rewatch one of our shows, I felt like I was him, just stuck in the dark, looking all weird. I couldn't do it anymore, man. I had to remember to turn the light on. I actually turned the light on 30 minutes before our episode. That way I did not forget.
There you go.
And dropped my water and all my stuff in here prior to it. But Q, let's get out of here the only way we know how.
Bear down.
Bear down.